Hello, friends. I'm Rosie Acosta, your host and guide on this journey to self-discovery and radical love. I've walked a path filled with challenges. Growing up in East LA during the 92 LA riots, it left me searching for meaning, for mentors, for a way to truly understand the purpose of life. But you know what I found? The power of conversation. So I decided to create a space where we can share these conversations with you, our community. And that's how the Radically Loved podcast was born. Join me as we dive into topics like mindfulness, spirituality, self-love, and the keys to overall healthy living. I'm joined by my dear friend, fellow author, producer, and teacher, Tessa Tovar.
Hi, I'm Tessa, and I'm grateful to be part of this community because it teaches me so much about what it means to be human. Ever since I was a little one, I was always asking the deeper questions in life. Why are we here? What happens when we are gone? What is the purpose of life? I love this show because I get to ask the questions that cut right to the meaning of life. I've learned that no matter how much we want the path to be clear, it never is. And that is actually part of the beauty that creates a radically loved life.
Please do us a favor, share the episodes you love with your friends and leave us a review. Together, we'll learn how to create a life that's truly, deeply, radically loved. Let's begin.
Okay, everyone. Hello. Welcome to the Radically Loved podcast. This is Tessa hosting your show today. I'm so honored to invite Dr. Harry Cohen, PhD, to the show. Harry is a psychologist, an executive coach, a restaurateur, and author of Be the Sun, Not the Salt, which is a very short, straightforward guide, which is also profound, that helps you be your best self. And I, for one, am raising my hand saying, yes, this is absolutely true. I've read it multiple times since I received it. And I also downloaded the audiobook because I love just putting you in my ears, Harry, and listening to your words of wisdom. So thank you so much for writing this book. And thank you for joining the show today. How are you?
I'm great and so honored and thrilled and grateful for you, A, doing your podcast, and B, inviting me on, but more importantly, that you took it to heart. You know, I've done a bunch of these. I do this for a living now. And some people say, so what is your book about? Versus, I've listened to it. I've read it several times. I love listening to the words. The idea that you get, which is keep it simple. Pay attention to the little things, the tiniest things that we can do that'll make a difference, that'll improve someone's life, our own life, and or others' lives. It's just so easy. It's the blink of an eye. And I'm thrilled. You asked me how I'm doing. I'm doing great. 6 o'clock here. We changed it from 5. I don't care. I get to do this. I love that I get to do this with you. And maybe, just maybe, somebody listening is going to go, I can't wait to dig into that, to hold the door or hold my tongue or help some.
Yeah. Oh, that. Well, holding my tongue. I mean, let's start with listening.
I know.
You know, go ahead.
Well, you know, the whole idea, you know, there's a chapter, be an Olympic listener, become an Olympic listener, which means every one of us can learn and practice how to be a more effective an Olympic listener, like a gold medal winning Simone Biles level listener with other people. And that practice of not speaking, putting the cell phone down, looking someone in the eye, paying attention to what is not said, asking a second or a third or a fourth question, being curious, really understanding what the other person is saying is something we can all work on forever. It's not something you ever stop doing, and the payoff is huge. What I meant about hold your tongue is don't salt other people's roots by saying the snarky thing that you're thinking. Just because you're thinking it doesn't mean you need to say it. And I get to practice this. I wrote this book so that I could leave the world a better place. My kids could, you know, have something to remember me by, and the world would be perhaps better. By just the tiniest little ways that people, you and I, and anybody else who picks it up or listens to it, can say, I can do that. That's not a bridge too far. I don't have to sign up for any course. I don't have to do anything. All I got to do is do the next right thing after I screw up, or pick up the piece of litter, or say good morning, or say please, or say thank you, or don't say the nasty thing. It would make somebody feel bad. So keeping it simple, and I just get more excited, like with this podcast, to find new and different and better ways to say and explain and share this with people, so that there's 8 billion people in the world, maybe 4 billion years from now, go, I'm sorry, I was a bit salty. Go ahead. You're about to say something. And it becomes part of our, you know, our language. And people are trying as best they can to be helpful, to be kind. I was with a personal trainer this morning at the gym, and we were talking about this. I gave him a swag. I gave him a quarter zip, and he appreciated that. And he said, I really love your book, because it's a compendium in one simple spot of all the easy ways that we can be better people. I like that. What's wrong with that? You know?
Oh, yeah. Well, I do. I think it's so nice to have something that's very simple and accessible and short and concise. I mean, you talk about not talking too much and not talking too much and being concise and being succinct with your words, being more intentional with your words.
There's a chapter, Make Your Words Count. And I rewrote this 50 times to say more by saying less. Do I need to say anything more? No. I can't remember anything, but I can remember be the sun, not the salt. Okay, got it. That's it. And short is easier to remember. The metaphor, the sun, like the leaves on the plant, makes it thrive. Salt on the roots kills it. Be the person that makes other people thrive. Don't be the person that makes other people feel bad. We're done.
Yeah.
And you know, your podcast, Radically Loved, it's really about love. Mm. You know, Mindy, who wrote the foreword, who is my exemplar. We do a Be the Sun podcast, and she was our 10th guest. We did one season with 10 guests, and she was our 10th. She is, to me, Mother Teresa, and she wrote in the foreword, you know, Harry's words come from a place of love. That was my intention, to be as loving as possible so that people could express love more easily to themselves and to others, period. And we can express love by showing up on time, by saying please and thank you, by doing the dishes. I had this new one where, you know, I wrote in there, fill in the potholes, the street you don't walk down. I think that was, I don't know, chapter 23. It was the 23rd of January. And so I took that to heart. And what does that look like for me? It means I didn't make the dirty dishes, but I can clean them up. So a friend said to me this morning, Harry, did you do the dishes? Yes, I did. And I feel good. I've been married 44 years, and I can get better as a husband. How? By showing love by doing the dishes.
What really stuck with me, what's continuing to stick with me as I reread the book many, many times, is the idea of practice. And practice makes you good at what you are practicing. And so this is very much the idea that there is no perfect that we're striving towards.
I love that you brought it up. What's great for me, and thank you, is that you're bringing up stuff that I could just get waxy and profound. I mean, I could wax on about, because it really is powerful, because people are always striving for perfection. Get off of that. This is the James Clear, just do 1% better. There is no such thing as perfect, so get off of that. And you get better at what you practice at. Oh, my God. So the tiniest victory of, you know what? That guy was irritating me, and I didn't say anything. Well done. Good practice there, buddy. You let the guy in front of you. You let the guy merge. You didn't say the obnoxious thing that you were thinking. You're practicing that. You get better at it. I gave a lecture to a group of young people. These are 19, 20-year-olds at the University of Michigan. And woman in the back of the class said, "How has this helped you, Dr. Cohen?" And I love the question because it's really like, so why should I try? You know, like, give me, what's in it for me? And the answer is very powerfully for me. My life is better. I'm happier. Less irritations, less pet peeves, less arguments, less, you know, huffy and puffy, pissy moments. I'm happier and more fulfilled. I'm more joyful. That's the payoff for me, that practicing this, your point, practicing this, I get to play my life, which is the penny whistle. You know, I have a friend, my best friend plays the penny whistle. I don't have a musical instrument. This is my musical instrument. I get to practice playing this delightful life, this tune, this thing we call life. You know, I'm 69. This is the final, I don't know, 10, 20, 30 years, and who knows what I got. But I get to do this really, really well. That's the payoff. That's what the practice is. It's like, you know, for people who play golf, you don't have a perfect round. You just, ooh, a beautiful shot. Nicely done. Go do it again. Tennis, ooh, right down the middle. Beautiful shot. Good. Do it again. Ooh, I had a lovely exchange with Tessa. Wonderful. Do it again. You know? So that's the beauty of it for me, which is don't complicate it. Practice this with a deft touch, not with a heavy hand. I gotta go, or I gotta work on being the sun. Don't. No. It's just be gentle with yourself and everybody else. That's the practice. So there's no heaviness. There's no, oh, you're saying we got to be nice to everybody always? No. Be as nice as you can whenever you can. A little bit more, you know?
Yeah. Well, you know what I was thinking about this week in particular is the apology. So the apology with the, you know, there's several tips which I find super helpful when you're apologizing, and I'd love to hear you talk about that. But other thing is this kind of, and I'm sure this is just human nature, right? This thing that comes up with ego when we're apologizing, and I'm feeling like this week I'm apologizing a lot. And so how do we apologize and not get down on ourselves?
Love this question. Love your question. Your genuine curiosity and wanting to lean into this, here's how you practice saying the simple sentence of genuine regret for the boo-boo that you made, period. You don't go more, you don't go less. You do that and you say, did good. So for example, I was late to my personal trainer this morning. I was calling in the Sports Talk Radio, how embarrassing. I wanted to talk about the Detroit Lions. And so I walked in and I said to him, I'm sorry for being late. I didn't go into a whole why with a lot of explanation and a buddy. I know how to do this. So less words is more. I'm sorry for being late. It's important for me to come on time and I don't like when I'm late. Now to your, like, how do you not be, don't, that you did it. So you say the simple sentence if you want to practice and prepare what I want to say I'm sorry. First of all, you have to mean what you're sorry for. I just read an article about the tendency to say, sorry, 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 which is, well, hold on a second. Don't say you're sorry for something you're not sorry for. It was a Hidden Brain podcast on apologies, actually. It was about the importance of being genuine and authentic in your, I did a boo-boo and I want to make amends, period. And you could practice that test without any more extra words. Like, wait, let me ask you, what were you apologizing for?
I forgot to do something at work. And for me, it felt like a big deal. So I felt really bad.
And what did you say? What did you say?
I said, I'm so sorry. It won't happen again. I promise. Period.
Beautiful. Now, I don't know if you can promise that. That's amazing. I wouldn't have gone there. Me, I wouldn't have said that just because I can't promise that. I would, but if you really can, oh, that's awesome. But the period is good for you to improve that apology is, listen, I feel really bad that I did that. I will do my best not to let that ever happen again. But that's, you know, the four agreements, be impeccable with your word. Don't make assumptions. Don't take anything personally. Always do your best. I remember, you'll do your best. You did good. You might forget something at work. So anyway, practice that without a lot of self-flagellation. In fact, not with zero self-flagellation. Zero. Come on, you got this. Well done, Tess.
Thank you. Thank you.
Hey there, tech-savvy listeners. Rosie here, and I'm thrilled to share with you a game changer in the world of tech accessories. But first, let me drop a little something special your way. Picture this, a sleek, stylish solution to safeguard your devices. Now, let's talk about SafeSleeve, founded by two California engineering grads in 2012. They set out to tackle a pressing issue, EMF radiation exposure risks. And boy, did they deliver. SafeSleeve isn't just about function. It's about practicality and style all rolled into one. So what's the deal with EMF? Studies left, right, and center have all raised red flags, linking exposure to higher rates of cancers in rats and even leading France to ban iPhone 12 sales due to radiation emissions. But fear not, because SafeSleeve's got your back. For a limited time for the listeners of this podcast, you can get 10% off by using code ROSIE10. You can get 10% off of your entire order. Head over to www.safesleevecases.com and use the promo code ROSIE10 to get 10% off of your entire order. Now, back to our show.
So I want to talk about the theme, the chapter on doing it anyways, just doing the work, you know, just taking action.
That was a ripoff from Mother Teresa. Mindy sent me a quote about something or other that Mother Teresa said, which was do it anyway, do it anyway, do it anyway. No matter what the reasons for why it's difficult to be heliotropic, why it's difficult to be the sun, the answer is do it anyway. And the point is that the do it anyway muscle, all of us can do it more easily than others. That's okay. No matter what, that's okay. Clean up the mess. That's okay. Do the next right thing. That's okay. Smile and move on. Do the best you can. And the do it anyway practice is don't let the excuses, which there are infinite number of excuses. The guy's a jerk. He had it coming. I don't deserve this. I was tired. You don't know what I had to deal with. Well, they're all just excuses. I love the keeping it simple of do it anyway, no matter what, so that you can, you don't have to work real hard at what should I do? You know what to do. Just say you're sorry. Just say, just clean it up. Something spilled, just clean it up. Whatever that might mean. That's the do it anyway practice so that you don't let all of the excuses, of which there are many, become the reasons for why you don't act beautifully. You are not kind and compassionate and grateful and sweet and loving and wonderful. We're born this way. So let's water the plant, the seed, you know, water a seed, it grows. Put it in the sun, it grows. We're that way. You pour a lot of love on us, watch what happens to us. Love is an amazing elixir. We already know that. So you pour love on yourself, you pour love on somebody else, watch what happens. When I used to do therapy, private practice, all I would do is love them, listen to them, give them my two cents. You know, shouldn't do that, should do that. You might want to consider that, but it was really just love. And love anyway. You know, no matter what, love them anyway. That's the cut to the chase of this, which is love is a great thing to practice. Active, it's a verb. Show love. Give love. Do, you know, do the thing that would make somebody go, thank you, that was really beautiful. You're welcome. I mean, there's just no downside to being kind. No, you know what I mean? Like, How do you get away with, now, if you're kind to somebody who's abusive, that's a different story. If you're kind to someone who's taking advantage of you, probably going to get ripped off. But I would rather us become, you know, fifth degree black belts in love.
Yeah. Well, on that subject, I often have this conversation with my husband, who believes, I think this is kind of in the realm of a pet peeve.
Oh, good.
This is a pet peeve I'm working on releasing.
Good.
The conversation that we often have is a difference of opinion in that I believe that love is inherent and it should be given freely. And he believes that love is to be earned and should not be given freely.
So I would never want to argue this one. This one, both lose. This is a lose-lose. A dear friend of mine said the source of all pain is needing to be right. Mm-hmm. So get off being right is always a good strategy. And I think both can be true. I like to lean on the why make it conditional? That's me. But if he wants to make it conditional, okay, you know. How does that work? You know, test this out in the laboratory of your own life. My experience in the laboratory of my life is giving love without it having to be earned is a better way. That's my experience. I wouldn't want to argue with him about that because I don't want to argue with anybody about this stuff. I would rather he feel that I love him and let him be transformed. If he wants to make loving me conditional, okay. I want to love my kids, I want to love you, love the people I encounter. And what I mean by that is give them respect, honor them, treat them as the diamonds that they are. And why not? I mean, I'm a diamond. I was talking to a friend, I'm a diamond on Delta, a lifetime diamond, 3 million miles because I've traveled a lot. And they say, thank you for your diamond status. Now, what's amazing to me is I feel great when they do that. They're giving me that little extra bit of love. Now, maybe because I've earned it, but why wouldn't they give it to, they give it to me because I've earned the diamond status, which I, let me just say, I appreciate it. I really do. But imagine if they said, well, thank you for big smile. Thank you for your business today, non-diamond person. I bet they'd feel it. I really appreciate your business. Thank you for, they make that, you can take any flight, but we appreciate your business. But when it's personal, you could have taken any flight at all, Mrs. Jones. Thank you for taking this one. I don't know. I want it authentic. I want my love to be expressed authentically, and I want it to come towards me. So earned or unconditional, I like giving it away.
Yeah.
A friend of mine once said this beautiful quote, a seed gives itself to the earth, and that's how the oak is born. Imagine if the seed said, I'm not going to give it up.
Yeah.
you ain't going to germinate me.
So how do we release our pet peeves?
Practice. Notice, see them, like you just said. I think this is a pet peeve of mine. Whatever they are, they're like, oh yeah, that's one of those peeves of mine. People come, I'll share with mine. I was thinking about this. People who come late, one of my pet peeves. People who are rude, people who are disrespectful, people who don't say please and thank you. I'm just listing them off to remind me, Harry, get off your high horse. My practice, the work of this, which is notice it, let it go. Notice it, let it go. Don't make it a big, yeah, but they should close the door after coming, the cupboard. They should close the cupboard. Just close the cupboard. Get off it. Okay. So the little things, you just notice it and go, what am I holding on to it for? I'm just creating more irritation. It's like a pebble in my shoe that I make like a piece of glass. So you're at your question, how do we release our pet peeves? Just notice them. And say, oh, I did good. Ooh, I did good. I didn't get into it with him. I let it go. And say it quietly to yourself. You have to announce it to the world. What a great pet peeve releaser you are. but just see it. Because seeing our irritations usually reveal how stupid we are. Like, really? You're that much better? You've never come late to Zoom meetings? I do a lot. Why do you think I get irritated when people come late to meetings? Hello, pot and kettle. Usually it's a projection. And I can't get on my high horse. Arrogance is not becoming. It's salt on roots. When you are holding on to a pet peeve, you are salting somebody's roots. You've got a holier-than-thou attitude. You've got an arrogant, holier-than-thou. Who do they think that can? Come on, man. I'm better than that. And I want to get wiser as I get older. And this is what I mean. Like, why are you so pissed about that? Don't you think, isn't life short? What if you died today? You'd be still pissed that he didn't do the such and such, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I want to live like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Well, so on the same thread, I mean, how do we realize that you're in a relationship maybe that's not serving you in this way? And, you know, you've done the things like listening and let go of your pet peeves and.
Good question. And you got to listen deeply to what is your experience? Am I feeling unloved, unsupported, worse, put down, salted? My roots are salt. I mean, how do I feel when I'm around this person? How do I feel like there's water on my roots and sun on my leaves and I'm thriving? Or do I feel bad around this person? And then you have to ask those questions to see, is this relationship healthy for me? And can I make it healthy? And you might need assistance from a third party. You don't necessarily need it, but a third, neutral third party, whether it's a colleague, a friend, a therapist, a family member, anybody who can say, tell me more. How do you feel when you're with him or her? What does he or she say or do to you, around you, that makes you feel and think that? Is it in your head? Are you imagining it? Or is it, you know, somebody says, you're no good, Nick. You're a stupid piece of dung. Yeah, like, what? You're not. That's not a relationship I would recommend anybody be in. I would say, after careful analysis and thoughtful self-inquiry and talking it over with yourself and a friend, this relationship is not good for me. I'm going to try my best to improve it. But if I cannot improve it, check, please. Exit stage left. We need to move on. We need to separate. We need to divorce. We need to find space between. I want the best for you and from you, and I want the best for me and from me, and this is not good for us. I mean, in my early days of marital therapy, many times I did divorce counseling, which was, you know, kind of obvious to me. You guys are not good for each other. You don't treat each other with love and respect. You don't want to make each other feel better. You're not good partners for each other. Why do you want to be with each other? Well, we're married. That's not a good enough reason. Well, we've got the kids. That's not a good enough reason. You need to take care of each other. That's my bias, which is, if you're going to be in a relationship, it should be really healthy for both. And if it's not, you have to determine, what do I need to do to change this or get out of it? Now, that's what I think and have seen. And my answer to your question, and I hope people who are, you know, in crappy relationships or in a relationship where they feel like their partner is salting their roots, they can say, wait a minute, I think this is not good. Do not stay in an abusive relationship. It is not good for anyone.
Yeah. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah. No, that's a very helpful perspective. I really enjoy that. And I think that this relates to my next question, which is about how we overcomplicate things when, you know, talking to someone such as yourself or a third party who might be objective can really help simplify or see things from a broader lens. And so it's so interesting to me. And do you think innately that humans make things more complex than they need to be?
Yes, yes, I do. I do think that it's an innate human phenomenon to not simplify things, but to make things more complex. Now, there's lots of reasons for that. Parenting, culture, mental habit, society, that's part of culture, that we overcomplicate things to avoid action, the necessary steps. Action is always available to us. What is the right thing to do? There is a right thing, and I don't know what it is, but there's a right thing to do. You can't just stay where you can, but that's not usually wise unless you're on a cliff. But we try and complicate things so that we can avoid oftentimes action. Necessary and right action. So while all, you know, people say, well, it's not that simple. Oh, yes, it's never that simple, but it often is simple. So I don't want to be glib and say things are very easy. Things are simple. You know, leave her or stay with her, divorce him or stay with him. No, but at the same time, try and, you know, Occam's razor, which is, you know, the simplest is usually the best, which is entropy is the tendency for things to find disarray. And I think that's the human tendency to complexify circumstances, to make things more complex. And we have to fight against entropy. You know how your house gets messy somehow? Like, how the hell does it get? How does your room get messy? How does this happen? Well, you know, you have to put systems in place to keep it from getting messy, because it does get messy. So try and keep things as simple as possible. I could get way better at that, and I will, but I want to try and make it easy for others to use this material by keeping it simple and making it less complex. Because what I have seen, doesn't make it necessarily truth, is that by making things complex, it avoids taking the next right simple action. Fill in the pothole. Say you're sorry. Say please and thank you. Yeah, but what exercise should I do? The one that you do. Well, which one? What time of day? Just go for a walk. Yeah, but how far should I walk? What pace should I walk? No, just go for a walk. You know what I mean? The exercise isn't, I'm using the metaphor of exercise, which is the heaviest weight at the gym is the front door. Just go. This is the keep it simple. Well, what exercise should I do? Anything is good. Well, should I hire a personal trainer? No, just go for a walk. What diet should I eat? Healthy food. Yeah, but what do you mean by healthy? You know what I mean? Like, don't overthink this, guys. Drink water. I mean, this is really good, which is get a good night's sleep, get outside, exercise, invest in your relationships. Watch what you put in your mind and your mouth. Now, someone told me that recently. Keep score. Sleep, consumption, outside, relationships, exercise. I like it because it's simple to remember. And it's uncomplicated. Get outside.
Yeah.
Get a good night's sleep. Well, is it 7.5 or 8.5? Oh, please, just get a good night's sleep. You know what I mean?
Yeah. That's funny. Because I was listening to you talk and I was going to ask you, what are practical ways we can simplify our lives? And you answered it.
Exactly. But I like the way that we're chuckling about it, because practical ways we can simplify life is do whatever simplifies our life. And that is whatever works. Now, there are great ones to use, which is get a good night's sleep and exercise and get outside. Tell someone you love them. Watch what you ingest. Hugely important. Don't get crazy. But reading stuff, you know, during COVID, man, I got really stupid in terms of what I put in my mouth and my mind. I read stuff that would make me upset. Now, what's that? What's that about? Oh, my light just went off. Sorry.
That's okay.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, you're fire lit. You look very cozy.
Oh, great. I love that. You know, but I noticed that I was eating and ingesting things that were not healthy for me. So that's stupid. I'm not going to beat myself up. I'm just going to eat better, you know, and stop reading. You know, I wrote a bunch of goals for 24, and one of them is limit scrolling to 1 hour. And I'm okay. I'm doing all right with that goal. But I'm talking about what I put in my mind, what's good for me to ingest. So I try and practice this stuff as best I can. I want to live like this. I want this to be my guide so that I live as good a life as possible for myself and everybody else around me. And people experiencing me experience me as a heliotropic, nice person. And I experience my life as that. And we can help a shit ton of people.
For those people that are listening that haven't picked up the book yet, we've been using this term heliotropic, which Harry does define. But if you're not familiar with it, that term, Harry, would you define it for us?
So heliotropic is the tendency for all living systems to be drawn to energy which sustains life, which is why a plant tilts towards the sun when you put it in the windowsill. It is drawn to the positive energy of the sun. And it turns out that human beings are heliotropic. They are what were called positive energizers. They make other people feel great by the way they behave. It's not personality, extroversion, introversion, gender, age, anything at all. It has to do with the way that human beings express their energy, usually through the virtues of compassion and kindness and authenticity, vulnerability, curiosity, generosity, dependability, all of these virtues that the ancients talked about are heliotropic. In other words, they are life-giving to the others around them. That's what it means to be heliotropic, to be like the sun on the leaves of the plant, nourishing its life. Conversely, it's really important not to be salt on the roots, not salt of the earth. Those are wonderful qualities, but salt on the roots of the plant that is de-energizing, uncivil, unkind, disrespectful, mean, sarcastic, and otherwise pissy, which make other people feel crappy. And again, this is empirical. It's not my opinion. It's not pop psychology. It is researched, and I've just made it simple by taking the word heliotropic and calling it be the sun, not the salt.
Yeah, thank you. Beautiful definition. So you talk in the book also about, well, what if I don't care? And I think about this, and maybe it's just a generational thing. Maybe every generation before me has said the same thing about, you know, youth being apathetic or they just don't seem to care. So what if we don't care?
Yeah, I don't know what to do about that. Honestly, Tess, I don't, if somebody doesn't care, I really don't know what to say to them. Can you make somebody care? I don't know. I wish I had, I'll think about that. What if someone doesn't care? Well, you certainly can't fake it, and I'm not going to try and convince somebody they should. You and I both know that they should. Life would be better if they did. The relationships would be better. Their whole life would be better. How do you want to work around or be around somebody who doesn't care? But I can't convince someone to care. So I'm going to do my best to care. And if someone doesn't, there but for the grace of God go I, and I'm not going to worry about it. That's how I think about it. Maybe I'm not. Maybe I could help them more. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe it's not your job to help them more. I don't know.
I don't think it is. I don't think it is.
Yeah,
I really don't.
Yeah,
I really don't.
So I was curious as I was reading your bio and learning more about you. This is a complete change of topic, by the way, just FYI. But I know that you're, like I said in the beginning, you're a restaurateur and you have a restaurant, the Black Pearl. And I just was curious if you would share. I mean, having a restaurant is like...
First of all, that's a labor of love in 15, going on 16 years now. I started it as a lark because I figured I would learn something and my kids could learn customer service. And I thought I knew that if you take care of your employees and you take care of your customers, you should be able to make a buck. And honestly, over those 16 years, I've learned so much that I just now, as the owner who I took on a partner, who's the general manager who runs it, I mostly enjoy it and sit back in awe and stand there and can't believe that 6,000 customers a month come through there and eat, drink, and be merry. My job is to keep the culture of the place healthy and heliotropic and wonderful, and mostly stand in awe and try and do what I can to make it successful. But I'm not the guy bussing dishes, washing dishes, making food, you know, worrying about, you know, how we're going to find the next whatnot. We're expanding, we're doubling our size, and we're going to take out a big loan, and we're going to figure out how to do it. But for me, it's more of the same. It's a way to express how can you do this work, this live your life and run a business and take care of employees and customers and make a buck and still be the son. To me, it's like, well, let's figure it out. For people who don't care, we don't want to hire them. For customers who are rude and unkind and disrespectful, I'm sorry, ma'am, you can't eat or drink here. So I have learned, hire great people, surround yourself with people who know what they're doing, and stand back and don't get in their way. As the owner, I have the luxury of not worrying about, you know, 12 tables and making sure my customers are fed. I can sit back and say, oh my God, I'm grateful for all these employees and all these customers. And my job as the owner is to hire good people and try and keep the culture good and keep my eyes and ears open for what can I do better? How can I practice what I'm preaching here? And so the customers and employees feel, wow, people really care here. What you said is the whole kit and the caboodle. If people care, they can feel that. If we can provide a good meal at a reasonable price, wow. Our location covers a lot of our sins. We got lucky with our fish tacos, and we're really, really a successful restaurant only from the grace of God and customers who have found us and keep coming back. I stand in awe every time I go and the place is full. I go, we're doing something right here. I just want to practice what it means to be the son and keep people feeling like they're valued and appreciated on all sides, employees and customers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, so restaurant industry, the service industry in general, I'd say these tenets of this book, great place to practice.
I hope that we get Will Gadara, who wrote Unreasonable Hospitality, on our podcast. He was the co-owner of one of the best restaurants in the world, 11 Madison Park. He talks about unreasonable hospitality, and he's so articulate in his, it's the same stuff. It's show people that you care. Show them that you really care. That's it. Now, there's a whole lot of everything else you got to go with it. But at the core of it, that's what the service industry is. If you can figure out how to get liquor costs, food costs, and labor costs within a margin, within a, you know, some simple parameters, and then pour on the love, it's a great business. So the service industry, whether you're a server or you're in the business, this is really helpful stuff. And, you know, I'll go to my grave preaching this and trying to live this. Because the Black Pearl, the little restaurant, it has to be this for people. Otherwise, people can feel the vibes that, you know, food might be good, but they don't feel really taken care of. And that's the essence of what service is.
So the Black Pearl, the name, my understanding is a Black Pearl is very rare.
Yeah.
To find. Does it have anything to do with?
Yeah, it's a rare jewel of the sea. So we named it after one of the rarest jewels of the sea, because it was a primarily seafood restaurant that we had a black motif with black granite and black slate and black tufted walls and black everything. So black pearl jewel seafood, that was the motif at the time. A fellow said, "Do you want to invest in a restaurant?" And I knew the location. And I said, "How are we going to do this?" And he said, "OPM. Other people's money." I didn't realize at that moment that I was the O and the P and the M. He turned out to be a dishonest fellow.
Oh.
And after a short, we got it up and running, and he then left, and I'm the owner of a restaurant that I had to figure out how to make work. Doesn't matter. It's all good.
You did it. Congrats. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I'm proud of it in the way that, you know, like raising kids, I'm proud of. I'm proud that we created a great restaurant where employees feel loved and customers love, and it makes a buck. You know, it's a testament that this material is not soft BS. It's a testament to, you know, if you really lean into anything, you can make it great if you, you know, work hard and care about someone and something.
Yeah.
Yeah. One day you'll come and visit. One day you'll come and visit.
I would love to. I've never been to, it's in Ann Arbor, correct?
Uh-huh. Yeah. And I have two front row seats. Now you're in the Pacific Northwest, so this might be a little hard work now, but University of Michigan is a football school, and I have two front row seats at the Michigan Stadium and two second row seats. So if you ever want to come, I will host you and buy you dinner at the Black Pearl.
Ah, you're so sweet. Thank you. How precious. I want to make sure that people can find you easily. Is there a favorite place that you like to connect?
Honestly, LinkedIn is good. BeTheSunNotTheSalt.com. There's a ton of resources. You can get our podcast, and Be Sunny Not Salty is another Instagram place that we post stuff. But I would say Be The Sun Not The Salt or my LinkedIn page. Be The Sun, Not The Salt on LinkedIn, or BeTheSunNotTheSalt.com. Lots of stuff on there. And Be Sunny, Not Salty. And let's spread this to the world. Pick up, by the Audible book is $4, and I am narrating it, along with Mindy Holman, who wrote the foreword. And Tessa, you can attest to the fact that it's a good and simple and helpful thing.
Oh my gosh. I've had it on repeat every day for a few weeks now.
Yes. You're so sweet. You're
I'm so serious sweet. Though. This is true. Thank you so much, Harry.
Hey friends. Thank you so much for listening to the Radically Love podcast. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review wherever you get your podcasts. It really helps. Also, don't forget to check out the Mindful Love Hub on Substack. This episode was produced by Tessa Tovar, music by DJ Taz Rashid.